You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. There is a wealth of culture in Vienna, from architecture to music to art. And now that includes art from Michigan's first people, with some pieces dating back to the early 19th century. How did Anne Schnebeck art from northern Michigan wind up on permanent exhibition at a museum in Vienna? Eric Hemingway of the Little Traverse Bay Bands of Odawa Indians is here with the answer. So, Eric, first of all, what kind of pieces are we talking about?
Well, we're talking about a very wide collection of art, and the pieces range from quill work, porcupine quill work on birch bark. We're talking carvings. We're talking snowshoes, bows and arrows, some clothing, some weavings from cattails and bulrushes and cedar bark. So there's a pretty wide range of materials.
And what kind of condition is it? Because some of these pieces are really very old, aren't they?
Oh, some of the pieces are pushing 200 years old, and the condition is amazing. We had a chance to go and see the pieces firsthand 2 years ago, and the country of Austria invited us over and paid for our trip, which is very generous of them, to help consult on the final touches for this exhibit that was going in. And we got to see the pieces, handle the pieces, and to actually hold something from my homeland, from Wagenoxing, that is 150, 170 years old, was quite amazing. But just to see the condition and how pristine it has been kept is also amazing.
So this fascinating story that goes back to the mid-19th century with one man, a Bavarian painter named Martin Pitzer.
Yes, he's one of the main collectors. There was another individual by the name of Swartz who was going through and collecting as well. But Pitzer, the lion's share of the collection is from his collection. And very interesting story. Yes, he was a painter, and he was going through and painting native missionaries in the Great Lakes. And he was charged with coming to Wagenoxen, or also known as Labrakroch, Land of the Crooked Tree, to do some paintings in the different churches here. And he started to acquire quite the collection when he was here.
And was his idea that he wanted to create a collection, or what was the motivation behind his amassing all of this art?
Well, there was, I think, several factors into him amassing this art. One, he was just very interested as an artist in collecting other art from other cultures. And two, some of the pieces were gifted to him from different natives in the community to show their appreciation for what he was doing. And third, I believe he was a little bit ambitious in the fact that he wanted to amass his own collection and bring it over to Europe and showcase it throughout different museums and probably make a little profit at that as well.
Okay. And at the time that we're talking about, so mid-19th century, is that kind of a point of inflection for the tribes in the sense of religious oppression?
Absolutely. So this is part of the story that goes in with the collection, is a time period in which the art reflects. And the early 1800s, well, really the entire 19th century was a time of religious oppression, not just for the Odawa, but for all Native people, where there was civilization policies that were created and implemented by the federal government. And under these civilization policies, it became illegal and taboo to carry out your Native religion and traditions. So things that had been going on for millennia in our homelands were becoming banned. They were becoming discriminated against. And part of that discrimination was the actual items that often, I feel, gets mislabeled as art. It goes beyond art. These are sacred objects that are used for ceremonial purposes by the Odawa. And as the oppression became more intense and more encompassing on the community, these pieces of our community started to be alienated. They started to leave, and there was actual mandates by the church here in Harbor Springs from Father Dijon and Father Berga that they would make natives, Odawa people, burn their sacred items in public.
Wow. Okay. So, and these are the kinds of items that we're talking about. So to see them in such beautiful, pristine shape must be a very powerful moment for you.
It's very powerful. And some of the items that are in Vienna today aren't sacred, and some of them I feel qualify as that. So the story starts to develop in my mind is, what happened to you? Why are you here? Did somebody, you know, in an act of desperation, move that object out of northern Michigan for fear of it being compensated and burned? Or did they just give up the faith completely and moved it on? Or did somebody, you know, take that item through nefarious means, you know, unethical collecting? So all this is going through my mind of seeing these pieces.
Wow. And to think that these pieces survived an ocean voyage to Europe and managed to survive two world wars. Hello, Austria. That's pretty amazing that it's in great shape. Do we know how it was able to survive in such great pristine condition?
No, that's still part of the story I'm finding out about this collection. And, you know, we have the paperwork over in Austria. It says, you know, they would purchase these items. Some of these items are outright bought, and there was no doubt of how they got from the native hands to Pitzer's hands. And then they traveled all across the Atlantic. They traveled through Europe. They survived these wars, and they resurface again in the last 10 years with this collaboration we've had with the Welt Museum Wien over in Vienna. So it's, to me, they're speaking out again, saying that we went through this transformation, this change, and we're coming back to help tell the story.
And as you say, the Welt Museum Wien is where they're on display, permanent collection, the Museum of Ethnology, so it's a good home there. And you have worked with the museum to help give them the context about the collection. What has that partnership been like, and what can other museums and governments learn from the way this has been done?
It's been a very rewarding relationship. It's been going on almost 8-10 years now that we contacted the museum about some of the items that they have from our area. And from that initial conversation, the museum responded and they were asking us for information about ourselves. I mean, it's a silly concept. Say, well, we want to know about you, but you need to tell us about yourself. And this doesn't happen very often in the world of historical interpretations, especially in museums when it comes to indigenous populations. A lot of times the narrative of the native population is being told without input from the tribe. But this wasn't the case. The Welt Museum Wien, under their curator of North American collections, Gerard Van Boesel, you know, said, this is your story, you need to help tell it. And so he came here several times collecting information, collecting items. So we developed this rapport with each other as historians, but also as humans. You know, this is a story of humanity and sharing. So I think other museums could take a good lesson in this, where if you want to talk about somebody, you talk to them and not about them.
So often it's, at the very least, a contentious relationship between Native nations and museums or schools or, you know, those who hold artifacts. So this is as you say, they came to you and said, tell us your story.
Absolutely. They said, for one, you're still here. And a lot of tribes can't say that. And said, you're still here. You're still in Wauganuxing. You're still in Wauganuxing. You know, where this art comes from. And we had one of our preeminent artists go with us 2 years ago to Vienna, Yvonne Walker-Kijik, and she does quill work on birch bark. So it was critical to show that continuity of tradition and culture and art that was practiced 200 years ago, and it's still being practiced today. And we wanted to show through this exhibit that we're still here, we're still practicing traditions that our ancestors did. It's just things have changed over time.
Eric Hemenway will talk about this collection and its remarkable journey from Middle and Cross Village all the way to Vienna. His talk is 5:30 this evening at the Harbor Springs History Museum. I always love talking history with you, Eric. Thank you so very much.
Thank you.